NPR's business news starts with more negotiations on financial reform. In Congress, the financial overhaul bill is entering its final stages, and lawmakers are still tweaking the details. Key moderate Republicans in the Senate were unhappy about a proposed tax on banks that was contained in the bill. Those Republican votes are considered crucial for the bill's passage, and so yesterday, House and Senate negotiators met to work out another compromise. NPR's Audie Cornish reports from Capitol Hill.
Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown was among the handful of Republicans who began to reconsider their support for the legislation because of a $19 billion fee it would have imposed on the largest banks.
Do you think the banks are going to pay it? No. The individual consumers are going to pay this in the middle of a two-year recession through higher ATM fees, credit card bank fees. It's going to hurt lending, small business and individual lending.
But dropping the fee meant that the bill would run into problems with budget rules. So Senate Banking Committee Chair Chris Dodd offered an alternative to offset the cost. First, cut off the troubled asset relief fund used to bail out banks 3 months early. Second, charge the banks more to insure their customers' deposits.
Coming up with a pay for in all of this is not easy. I'll acknowledge that. It's difficult. But nonetheless, we bear that obligation to do so.
That accounting didn't go over so well with some Republicans.
If we did this in a private sector action, we would all be in jail. This is fraud on the American taxpayer. That's clear and simple.
But New Hampshire Senator Judd Gregg and other GOP members were outvoted, and the measure was approved. With this agreement, Democrats may have the votes they need for final passage, but they're not likely to send legislation to the president's desk until after next week's recess. Audie Cornish, NPR News, The Capitol.
Today is the last day for home buyers to close on their purchase if they want to get that $8,000 federal tax credit. But a national realtors group says tens of thousands of people may not make it because of various delays. NPR's Tamara Keith reports on the mad dash to close.
Buying a house is almost always stressful, but the stakes are raised for people racing the clock to qualify for the home buyer's tax credit.
Everything is coming down to the wire.
Sarah Dyson and her husband Matt were supposed to close on a townhome in Northern Virginia a month ago, but they've faced one delay after another. Now it's not clear whether they'll be able to close before the credit is set to expire. Dyson says she went out to lunch yesterday with her husband, and she snapped at him.
And then I kind of sat back and was like, whoa, why am I even getting mad? And I realized I was so stressed out and didn't even realize it.
And you can't blame her. There's $8,000 on the line here. Tim Maruzak says he may have to back out on buying if he can't get the tax credit. When he made an offer on a four-bedroom house in Austin back in December, there's no way he imagined he'd still be trying to close come summer. The house is a short sale. He's buying it for less than the current owners owe. And that means a bank had to get involved.
I was told that we were going to close by June 4th. The bank came back and said that they will not meet that deadline, and they are not sure when they're going to close.
And all he can do is wait.
I'm ready to close. My realtor's ready to close. My mortgage company's ready to close. We're just waiting on a bank just to send the information over and say, okay, you know, sign here. And it's really kind of irritating because it's totally out of my control.
Yesterday, the House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed a bill that would extend the closing deadline to September 30th. But the bill's fate in the Senate is a bit murky at the moment. Lucian Salvan is a spokesman for the National Association of Realtors. He says when Congress expanded the tax credit last fall, everyone thought allowing 60 days for buyers to close was plenty of time. But they were wrong.
There are a lot of factors in there that we didn't think about. A lot of the lenders are saying that their pipelines are filled right now. They just weren't staffed up to close so many loans on June 30th or just before it.
Add to that tightened lending standards and countless other things that could cause hiccups. And Salvan estimates 180,000 people who were expecting to get the tax credit could lose out.
I think it's a tragedy. This would just sort of dash all their hopes and crush their dreams.
We could get you started here signing.
Todd Ewing will be asking a lot of people to sign here today. He's the founder of Federal Title and Escrow Company in Washington, D.C. He shows me his calendar.
Basically, at this point, we are triple booked on the hour, every hour starting at 9 o'clock.
He has 19 people on the schedule today, all rushing to close before the credit expires. And Ewing says there are many more waiting for their paperwork to come through.
If all those 15 or so get on the counter, in addition to the ones we have, we're all going to be here till midnight. I mean, literally, we will be. And for those who don't make the calendar, you know, there will be some tears shed.
That is, unless Congress steps in and votes to extend the deadline. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
We're going back now to the fall of 2008, when a mortgage crisis brought fears of a collapse among the country's biggest banks. Congress passed emergency legislation creating the $700 billion Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, as it's known, got broad bipartisan support, and markets did stabilize. But this year, that yes vote on TARP has put many congressional Republicans on the defensive, and it's cost some their jobs in GOP primary elections. NPR's Don Gagne reports.
Let's look back to when Barack Obama had not yet been elected. The economy was the issue in the presidential campaign, and Republican President George W. Bush spoke to the nation, thanking Democrats and Republicans for passing the TARP bill.
This week, Congress passed a bipartisan rescue package to address the instability in America's financial system. This was a difficult vote for many members of the House and Senate, but voting for it was the right choice for America's economy and for taxpayers like you.
Today, Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com offers this assessment.
TARP was a success. I mean, when you take the totality of what was done here, it saved the global financial system and ensured that the Great Recession did not turn into a depression.
Nonetheless, TARP has become a big political issue this primary season. Nathan Gonzalez of the Rothenberg Political Report says it is often associated with President Obama, even though George Bush signed it.
I think Republican primary voters and conservatives are not distinguishing between the TARP vote, the stimulus vote, maybe even the health care vote. They're all viewed as bad votes.
As a result, 21 months later, many Republicans who voted for TARP at President Bush's urging have come under attack, even though they voted against President Obama's health care and economic stimulus packages. One prominent victim was Utah Senator Bob Bennett, a three-term conservative whose bid for re-election was rejected at the state GOP convention last month by Tea Party activists. The big reason? His yes vote on TARP. Then there's Texas, where TARP supporter Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, a conservative Republican, ran for governor.
Just one day later, Senator Hutchison bailed on Texans and voted for the $700 billion Wall Street bailout.
She lost along the way, being labeled Kay Bailout Hutchison. In South Carolina, incumbent Republican Congressman Bob Inglis, also a TARP supporter, got swamped in a primary. And in the state's GOP gubernatorial race, Congressman Gresham Barrett seemed exasperated when he explained his vote.
Unfortunately, a lot of people have disagreed with my TARP vote, and they can't get over it. And you know, there's nothing I can do about that. It is what it is.
Barrett also lost. In August, Michigan holds its primary. Now, this is a state with the nation's highest jobless rate. GM and Chrysler both needed a bailout, so there's sentiment for the government doing what it can to help. Congressman Pete Hoekstra is the frontrunner in the GOP race for governor, but Hoekstra voted for TARP and has been pummeled for that vote in a recent barrage of TV ads. Now the race is tightening. Political analyst Bill Ballinger says Hoekstra has to be worried about who turns out in the primary. He says it's the most conservative voters who are angry and the most motivated.
And they're loaded for bear, and they want to take it out on somebody if they get the opportunity in the right race on August 3rd.
There have been Republican TARP backers who have survived this year. Arkansas Congressman John Bozeman won an 8-candidate contest for the GOP Senate nomination in his state. But he had to explain his TARP vote often, as he did in this local TV interview.
But I've always said there's nothing conservative about letting the entire lending institution of the investment banks melting down. I think a lot less jobs were lost in Arkansas, a lot less savings, and a lot less pension plans.
And if Republicans are fighting over TARP in the primaries, in the general election, it'll be Democrats who have to defend their votes, with the issue not likely to lose any of its potency come November. Don Gagne, NPR News, Washington.
We'll be right back.
This is NPR.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Michelle Norris. President Obama held a town hall meeting today in Wisconsin to talk about the economy. For his backdrop, he chose a town that has been walloped by the economic downturn, Racine. It's a manufacturing town where jobs have been disappearing for decades, including thousands since Mr. Obama took office. Not all the city's workforce is blue-collar, though. It's also home to the corporate headquarters for companies like SC Johnson and Modine Manufacturing. For a more detailed picture of Racine and its economic troubles, I spoke with Rich Rovito, a reporter for the Business Journal of Milwaukee.
Racine has a long history of deep ties to the manufacturing sector, so when the economy goes sour, Racine gets hit especially hard. The second highest unemployment rate in the state right now at over 14%. But that's actually down. It was up around 16-17% in recent months. You've got companies that have been laying off workers, shutting down plants. But at the same time, you do have the corporate headquarters there. SC Johnson, one of the largest companies in Wisconsin, done fairly well in weathering the recession. In essence, it's the blue-collar folks that have gotten hit a lot harder here. But that's kind of the way it is in southeastern Wisconsin altogether. There's a large portion of this economy that still is driven strongly by the manufacturing sector.
Now, as we know, Racine has been losing jobs for a very long time. Have things improved at all since Obama took office? Did the hundreds of thousands, in fact, millions of dollars in stimulus funding make a difference?
Well, the stimulus money seems to have ended up on the roads. Every road project that they think they could get in, they're doing right now in southeastern Wisconsin. And I don't see a lot of it going directly to manufacturers. You have one company in Racine, Rude Lighting, that makes energy-efficient street lighting that has gotten some stimulus funds. But that's, as far as I know, that's about the extent of it as far as what's gone to manufacturers. Most of it has gone into street projects.
During the election, the president had a difficult time connecting with blue-collar workers throughout the country, but not in Wisconsin. He had strong support from the manufacturing base there. Is that still the case?
I think so. There was news coming down today that's going to make things a lot better. Bucyrus International, one of the companies in southeastern Wisconsin, it has done very well. They were on the verge of losing a $600 million order. The U.S. Export-Import Bank decided not to provide loan guarantees to a company that was building a mine in India, which jeopardized the $600 million order and 1,000 jobs that were tied to it. Senator Herb Kohl from Wisconsin, as well as some local elected officials, and President Obama chimed in on this, and just about an hour ago got word that they are considering reversing the decision and will provide loan guarantees that will save this order and save these jobs.
The president is greeted today by members of the local Tea Party, and they say the president is not doing nearly enough to fix the local economy. Is that a popular sentiment?
I think so. Here in Wisconsin, we feel the effects of the downturn differently just because at last count, Wisconsin was either first or second in the number of overall jobs tied to manufacturing. And with that sector being hit as hard as it was, even the iconic manufacturers in the area like Harley-Davidson, which for two decades just reported quarter after quarter of record earnings, they've been struggling like crazy the last 2 years, closing plants, shedding thousands of jobs, threatening to move work out of Wisconsin. So things have not turned around yet.
So, Rich Rovito, we've been talking about blue-collar workers. Let's talk about white-collar workers. What's the view of Obama there?
I think maybe a little bit better. I want to say that politics stays out of it a little bit more at the white-collar level. It seems like there's been more voices out there on the manufacturing floor about these issues than there have been in the corner offices.
Are folks in Racine talking about any kind of recovery? Is that a word you hear there?
You hear it from the elected officials down there, but whether or not you're actually seeing that on the streets, I don't see it. It's just been a real slow, struggling recovery.
Rich Rovito, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Michelle. My pleasure.
Rich Rovito is a reporter for the Business Journal of Milwaukee.